Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Yashodhanandana Yashodhanandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja
Kishore Kishore Ki Jai Swayam Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivrajaka Charya Ashtotara Shata Sri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayet nashta praesho vadreshu nityam bhagavat sevaya bhagavat yuttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki paramananda pataya prema varshaksharayate sarvada sarva sevaya shri krishnaya namostume. So Hare Krishna, today we're in the 10th canto. We're reading chapter 16, texts 63 and 64. And 64 is on the board. So I'll go ahead and read 63. And then we can responsibly do 64. Dvipam ramanakam hitva sadam etam upashrita yad bhayatsa suparnastam nadyanmat padalanchitam. Out of fear of Garuda, you left Ramanaka Island and came to take shelter of this lake. But because you are now marked with my footprints, Garuda will no longer try to eat you.
Sri Rishi Ruvacha Mukto Bhagavata Rajan Krishnenadbhutakarmana Tampu Jayam Asa Muda Nagapatnyaschasadaram Shri Rishiruvacha muktau bhagavata rajan krishnena dhuta karmana tam pujayam asa muda nagapatnyascha sadanam shri rishiruvacha muktau bhagavata rajan krishnena dhuta karmana tam pujayam asa mudha nagapatnyascha sadaram. Please chant. Shri Shri Vacha Rajan Krishninad Bhutta Karmanad Tam Pujayam Asamudha Nagapatyascha Sadaram. The word for word. Shri Rishi Uvachaha. The sage Shukadev said, Muktaha, freed, Bhagavata, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rajan, O King Parikshit. Krishnena, by Lord Krishna. Advuta Karmana, whose activities are very wonderful. Tam, him. Pujayam asa, worshipped, muda, with pleasure, naga, of the serpent, patnyaha, the wives, cha, and sa adaram, with reverence. In the translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Shukadeva Goswami continued, My dear King, having been released by Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose activities are wonderful, Kaliya joined his wives in worshipping him with great joy and reverence. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments as follows on this verse. The word Adbhuta Karmana indicates the Lord's wonderful activities of saving the residents of Vrindavan from Kaliya, saving Kaliya himself from Garuda, and bestowing grace upon both the victims of violence and the committer of that violence. The word Krishnena, by Krishna, indicates that because Kaliya's wives were great devotees of the Lord, and offered him loving affection, Krishna withdrew, Karshanam, both Kaliya's offense against the Lord's devotee Garuda and that against the residents of Vrindavan, who were very dear to him.
Om Gyanatiminandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militangena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale
Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Ugam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Vangai Teganim Yat Kripam Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataram Namaom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyapadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevaja Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktarinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna. I'd like to first ask for the blessings of all the devotees present, especially Keshav Kishore Prabhu, my senior. Please forgive me for speaking in front of you. Hari Shyam Prabhu, also my big brother. Forgive me. And you two are my friends, so please forgive me for any mistakes. So the two verses that we're discussing today are spoken by two different people. Text 63 is Krishna's final words to Kaliya after Kaliya offered his prayers. And then text 64 is Shukadeva Goswami's description of what Kaliya did after offering his prayers and kind of a summation. Our acharyas have given some nice commentary on that verse in particular. But we'll start with text 63. Let's first kind of rewind and get a little perspective on where we are. So this is Kaliya Damana Leela. So Krishna has just finished chastising Kaliya, the Kaliya serpent. So after doing his wonderful dance, Kaliya's wives noticed a change in Kaliya. It's described that they saw in his eye, in a very subtle way, that he was no longer harboring all of the envy that he previously was harboring as a serpent. And so, seeing this change and being compassionate Vaishnavis, they immediately changed their entire demeanor. Whereas before they were thinking, yes, our Lord is finally going to kill this rascal who we've been tolerating for so long. We've been tolerating this snake for who knows how long they were tolerating him. We don't hear the description exactly of that, but for some time. And so they were thinking, yes, he's going to die. And we'll be free of this. We can just be devotees. But they saw a change in him, and they saw that he was becoming favorable to Krishna because of the heavy beating that he was receiving, and because of Krishna's purifying touch, removing all of that poison and all of that envy, removing all of that, he had changed. And so they then offered prayers where they said, we wanted him to die originally, but now we see that he's changed. And then they said something to the effect of, O Krishna, please save this serpent who is our very life and soul, having become a Vaishnava. He's our husband and he's our very life and soul. And because he's taken to your bhakti now, because now he's going to be your devotee, we can't imagine living without him. And so they pray like this. And then Krishna, he's quite pleased by this, by their prayers. And so then he hears Kaliya's prayers. Because Kaliya, he comes back to his senses. He's quite beaten. It's described that every bone in his body was smashed. every single bone was obliterated. We can't imagine the pain that that must feel like. Although, as sadhakas, we'll have to go through something similar in a subtle way in order to become purified. This lila is very, very representative of what one needs to go through. Maybe not physically. Hopefully we don't have to fall off a building and break every bone in our body. Hopefully. Some people do. Some people have to get in terrible car crashes or have really, really difficult things happen to them in order to finally say, okay, this world isn't really worth it. But hopefully we can at least have second class intelligence in some degrees and see that other people go through this. See that Kaliya's serpent, he went through this, and we don't need to get obliterated completely in order to surrender a little bit. But so Kaliya Nag had every bone in his body broken, everything smashed in order to come to this point. And then when he came back to his senses, after hearing his wife's prayers, he also offered some prayers of his own. And Krishna was very pleased by these prayers. And so then Krishna spoke. And Krishna told him a number of things. And then he ended with this verse. He says, okay, I'm pleased with you. Now please leave this place. Because after all, you are still a poisonous serpent. And this place is not meant for poisonous serpents. This place is meant for the cows and my friends and my family. The Yamuna is no place for poisonous serpents. So you please, you go back to Ramanaka. And then, as if to console Kaliya, Krishna speaks this verse. He says, Dvipam Ramanakam Hitva. He says, you've given up that island. You gave up that Ramanaka island for the sake of coming to this place. Pradam etam upashrita. And you took shelter of this place. Why? Yadvayat sa suparnastvam. Because you were afraid of Suparna. You were afraid of Garuda. Because of that fear in your heart, you took shelter of this place, which Garuda cannot come. But he says, there's no longer any need for this fear. Nadyat mat padalanchitam. Why is there no more need for Kaliya's fear? Krishna says, because you have the mark of my footprint on your head. In other words, he's saying, you're my servant now. I've heard your prayers. I've heard the prayers of your wives. You're now my servant. If you perform my bhakti, then there's no need for any fear. You have this mark on your head. Garuda won't hurt you. He's my servant. You're my servant. He's my servant. There's no need for fear. And so I thought this was quite profound, and it caused a little bit of reflection. And one verse that came to mind is spoken by Kavi Yogendra in the 11th canto, in the second chapter. He says this, it's a famous verse, Bayam Dutya Biniveshita Shyat. Basically, what this verse means is that fear is the result of absorption in Dvitiya, or the second thing. So Krishna is the first thing, and Dvitiya is the second thing. And absorption in that is what separates us from Krishna, separates us from Ishwara. So this is a little technical, but basically what it means is by identifying with this temporary material body, by identifying with other things that we think aren't Krishna under the influence of Maya, by identifying with those things, one becomes neglectful of his actual position. And because of that neglect and because of the duality that is created by that perspective, one experiences fear. Because one enters into the realm of calculation. Because when one enters into that dualistic understanding of the world, myself and everybody else, I now have to think in a selfish way and think in my own interest. When one does that, then one enters the realm of attachment and aversion. And one forgets that actually the only thing that there is to be attached to is Krishna's service. One's original position, Jivara Swarupa Hoy Krishnara Nitya Das. Eternally, one is the servant of Krishna. Our ontological place to be, as Prabhupada so eloquently puts it in the introduction of the Bhagavad Gita, is to serve. And Prabhupada explains there that actually we're running around this world We're looking for someone to serve because we can't separate ourselves from this desire to render service. Even we've come to the point of deciding, okay, dvitiya, the second thing, myself or some other person or some other object in this world, we still can't move away from the desire to serve. We're not actually meant to gratify ourselves, and so that always leaves us feeling a bit empty. Service has to be there. Because this is our jiva swarupa, the very nature of the jiva is to be das, is to be a servant. But when we neglect this principle, again, we come into the realm of duality and self-interest, which is characterized by attachment and aversion. Because when we enter into the realm of maya, we have to think of what does maya really mean. A lot of times we hear maya means illusion, maya means that which is temporary. These are true, but if we really look at the word, if we look at maya and what it means to be in this predicament that we as embodied souls are in, that all people who are embodied are in, I can at least speak for myself. Some of you may be beyond that, but for myself, the predicament that I find myself in, then we have to understand what that predicament is. So the word maya, it comes from the verbal root ma, which means to measure. We've heard this before, that ma means to measure. So maya means that which can be measured. In other words, it means that which is limited, because you can only measure something which has a limit. If something doesn't have a limit, then it's immeasurable. It can't be measured. So in reference to that, to this world, it means that this is the place of limitations, and it's the place of measurements and calculations. It's the place where we say, I think I can take this. I think I can get away with this much. I think that I can push this person this far. I think we're always trying to carve out some comfortable place for ourselves, and we're always racked in anxiety as to how we're going to sustain that, maintain it, or if we're in a good place, how we're going to expand it. When it's retracting, then we feel the anxiety of how am I going to preserve it and stop myself from losing so much of it and try to save as much as I can. So this mentality, which ultimately it breeds fear, it's bhayam dvitiya abhinivesha syat. This mentality is completely, what's the word I'm looking for? It's juxtaposed against, or it's antithetical. It's antithetical to our actual nature. Because our nature is to be in connection with Krishna. And Krishna is aprameya. So maya means to measure. Aprameya means that which cannot be measured. It comes from the same root. So aprameya, that which cannot be measured. Krishna is described as aprameya. He's incalculable. He's infinite. He goes on forever and ever and ever. His qualities never end. Nothing about him ever ends. So therefore, he can be experienced, but he can't be quantified. And therefore, nothing spiritual can actually be quantified, per se. Everything in spiritual life is breathtaking at every moment, we can say. There's no such thing as boredom on the spiritual platform. At least not in the way we experience it here. There's no complacency. There's no mode of ignorance there. And this is important for us to understand because this realm of measurement that we find ourselves in, which we're at every moment, even as sadhakas, trying to find our way out of, this realm of measurement, it's the abode of the mind. Because the mind's two functions are attachment and aversion. The two things that the mind does are to say, I like this, therefore I want it for myself. In other words, it quantifies that this is good, and it calculates that this is bad. I don't want this, I want to keep this away. This attachment and aversion on the basis of selfish interest. I don't know why, but ever since Alex started bringing me water, giving water to the Bhagavatam speakers, and become parched 5 minutes into speaking. It's never happened before. But so we can say that these two principles, this attachment and this aversion, or as they're described in the Bhagavad Gita, Icha and Dvesha. Prabhupada says desire and hate. These are the yardstick of the material world. This is how we move around the world. We go through the world on the basis of I like this and I don't like that. Or more often, actually, it's not usually so neutral, I love this and I hate that. I can't stand that person. I can't, it just gets under my nerve, gets under my skin. I can't stand that. And oh man, I love that. I'll do anything to get that. I love Ben and Jerry's ice cream. This kind of attachment and aversion. These things are there. So Krishna has explained this process a bit in the Gita. He says, Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoham sarge yanti parantapa. So sarva bhutani, all living beings, everyone who is embodied. Sammoham sarge, they're born into delusion. They're stuck in delusion. And what is that delusion? Dvandva mohena samutena. It has arisen from this dualistic concept. And that dualistic concept is, the duality is Icha and Dvesha. Attachment and aversion. Icha being attachment and Dvesha being very strong aversion. So this is the realm of the mind. And I find this prevalent. The reason I'm going through this is because Kaliya's entire story is a perfect caricature of these principles playing out. His story before coming to Vrindavan, even his time in Vrindavan, as we hear the snippet of it that we hear in the Bhagavatam. It's a perfect caricature of these two things playing out. So when Kaliya was a rishi, before he became a snake, he was on a mountain. And he was meditating, and another rishi came along. It's a big mountain, he's the only guy there. And this rishi said, hey, this looks like a great place to meditate. I see why you're up here. Do you mind if I just sit over here? On this half, we can share this mountain, we can meditate together. And Kaliya said, no, sorry, this mountain isn't big enough for the both of us. This is my mountain. This is my place. He calculated and he thought, it's mine. Nobody, no, you can't come and you can't, you know. He was very averse to the idea of somebody coming and taking something of his, possibly being there, creating some disturbance. And so he was cursed. The other sage said, this is envy. This doesn't fit somebody who's going for self-realization. This doesn't fit a yogi. You're sitting here meditating. What are you meditating on? What is the point of your meditation? If you're so attached to something which you can't even own, you're just sitting there. You're so attached to this mountain. Become a snake. Big Tulsi Mundra. He said, become a snake. And so then Kaliya became a snake. And he started to live on Ramanaka Island. But it didn't stop there. Then he was a snake on Ramanaka Island, naturally envious. And the snakes were being eaten, because Garuda likes to eat snakes. Prabhupada says he's a Vaishnava, but he's not a vegetarian. He likes snakes, he likes fish, he's a bird. That's what birds do. He's a big bird. Eagles, they swoop down. I remember watching National Geographic. And one thing that was so captivating to me as a child was they would show slow motion footage of an eagle swooping down and catching a cobra or something. And it's just like, whoa, so cool. So we can imagine Garuda with somebody like Kaliya, some big, 100 foot long, 1,000 hooded or 100 hooded snake, just epic. But so Garuda, he would have this pastime and he'd fill his belly like this. And so all the snakes of Ramanaka Island, they came together and they said, we've got to stop this because it's random. Sometimes he comes for one, sometimes he comes for three. We're in full anxiety. This isn't fair. And so they appealed to Garuda. They said, look, we'll cook for you. We'll make you something. We'll make an offering to you on a regulated basis. At least let us have some peace. We know we're snakes. We know we're envious, but give us some peace. And Garuda agreed. He said, okay. I don't remember if it was once a week or once a month or once a fortnight, but on a regular basis, he said, you make your offering, I'll come and I'll take it, and then you can at least be peaceful. So it came to be Kaliya's turn, Kaliya Naga's turn, to make the offering. And so he prepared the offering, and then, instead of waiting and giving it to Garuda, because of this Icha and Dvesha, because of his severe enmity, and because of his calculative nature, then why let him enjoy this? I can enjoy this. I'm probably good. I can take Garuda. I can fight him. No problem. I'll just eat his offering. And he hasn't dealt with me. You know, he just took some other water snakes. No problem. So he ate the offering. And then Garuda came, and Garuda was hungry. And when someone's hungry, it's not a good idea to mess with them. And we can imagine Garuda's anger. And so he became very, very angry. And he went to eat Kaliya. And Kaliya, being quite powerful, was able to fight him back. He didn't just give up. But ultimately, he lost the fight and he had to flee. So he fled, and then he took shelter of one person whose name evades me. But that person told him, I know where you can go. If you go to Vrindavan, Garuda was cursed some years ago by Shobari Muni. And he was told, you can't come here. You're cursed. You're not allowed to come near the Yamuna. You're not allowed to come to Vrindavan. And so if you go there and you reside there, you'll be peaceful. You won't have to worry about this Suparna, about this Garuda. And so Kaliya then went to the Yamuna. And he went to live in the Yamuna. So twice, it's got him into trouble. Somehow his great fortune is it led him to Vrindavan. I don't know that part of the story. I vaguely remember something about him being a devotee as the yogi or before the yogi, but you can't quote me on that because I'm not sure. But somehow or other he got to go to Vrindavan. And then when he was in Vrindavan, again, he's in this lake and Krishna jumps into the lake. And he couldn't handle it. He's in my space, man. Who is splashing in my lake? And so he reared up on his hoods and he tried to kill Krishna. He looked Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right in the eye and thought, I can take him. I'll kill him. I'll kill him, this rascal child. This is my lake. And so this Icha and Dvesha, this attachment and this deep hate, this envy that snakes, they feel. Snakes as a species are known to just bite for the hell of it. They just bite because you, whatever, you know. Sometimes they go into people's houses at night and they crawl up into the bed and bite you, you know. It's one thing that if you step on one when you're outside, you don't see it and you step on him, yeah, okay, you got bit. But they crawl to you, they come for you, hey, what's up, you're dead, finished, extremely poisonous. So this was his nature. This is very important for one who's on the path of sadhana bhakti to calculate very deeply, to contemplate very deeply. Because as Krishna stated in that verse, sarva bhutani, all embodied beings are suffering from this. All embodied beings are going through this experience of icha and dvesha, of accepting and rejecting things, of making enemies, of wanting to be prosperous, and when that doesn't work out, becoming frustrated and angry. We're all a bit serpent-like in this world. Everyone has this nature to some degree or other. To the degree that they're not purified by devotional practice, to that degree, they're suffering from this. This dvandva moha, this deep bewilderment of duality. And so it's very important for a sadhaka to contemplate this, because it's a big, big problem. But even in this verse, Krishna has given a really, really nice practical answer. He said, Matpada lanchitam. The answer to all of this, the answer to getting out of this cycle of the mind and of this attachment and aversion, attraction and repulsion, the answer to this is to become Krishna's devotee. He says, take the mark of my feet on your head. You've taken the mark of my feet on your head. Now you have nothing to worry about. This bhayam dutiya biniveshatasya, this fear, which is born from this duality, from absorption in the second thing, that will be nothing if you absorb yourself in the first thing, the only thing actually. If you absorb yourself in Krishna bhakti. So Kaliya, he's showing us through his story, and Krishna's showing us through Kaliya's story, that we have to become just like Kaliya. We have to become marked with the lotus feet of Krishna. We have to take that as our upadhi, so to speak, our transcendental upadhi. We're told sarvupadhi, sarvopadhi vinirmukham, that we're supposed to remove all upadhis. In the Narada Bhakti Sutras, it said, get rid of all of these upadhis. But actually, there's one upadhi that's a transcendental upadhi, which is I am Krishna Das. I am Krishna's servant. So we have to take on this upadhi. And what that means is to give up this mental infidelity, to give up this desire to enjoy this world, and this aversion to the lack of enjoyment and the frustration which ultimately results from our attempts. As long as one does that, he'll be subject to this fear, to this bhaya that Kaliya was feeling, and the reason why he was fearing to leave, why he came to Vrindavan in the first place. But what's more, this Leela's quite spectacular in this regard, because Kaliya has also demonstrated the perfect means to appeal to Krishna for help with this seemingly insurmountable problem. We have this difficulty, and it seems that how am I to get over this? How am I to climb this barrier of my own attachments and aversions? But Kaliya has given us a very, very nice way to pray to the Lord in order to get over these things. Hare Krishna. He said back in verse 58, Vayam chitatra bhagavan sarpaja tirumanyava katam chajamas tvanmayam dustyajam mohita swayam. Basically what he's saying, O Lord, I'm a snake. And so it's my very nature to be envious. It's my very nature to be urumanyava, extremely angry all the time. I hate everyone. Basically, I hate everyone and everything. How can I give this up? How am I to give this up? It's my nature. Actually, it was given to me by you because everything comes from you. So how am I supposed to give this up? Kaliya says this. And the mood he's saying this with, he's saying it's not possible for me to give it up. It's not possible for me to do this. The mood he's saying this with is a mood of surrender, which is ultimately what we have to come to. We don't say, okay, I'll give up these things. Now I've done it. Now I'm realized. Now I no longer have attachments and aversions. By my own strength, I'll figure out how to do that. Actually, the process is to come to the realization that these things are insurmountable. I can't do this. I can't win this battle. Actually, I've been trying for years, and I'm only becoming more the loser. I'm only becoming deeper and deeper. Our acharyas have shown through their writings, especially the words of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Narottam Das Thakur. We hear these things. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I'm the worst of sinners. I've never done anything useful. He says that when saintly souls see me, they turn the other way. They cross the street and walk on the other side of the road when they see me. So this understanding that actually I'm not able to fix myself, I need help. And calling out to Krishna, this is your energy that I'm underneath. You are the proprietor of this maya which I find myself captured in. Please help me. This is what Kaliya is showing us has to be done. Krishna is showing us through this Kaliya Damana Leela that it's actually not by our own strength that we'll be able to overcome these things. And indeed, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says this, Mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. He says, my energy is very difficult to overcome. It's impossible. Duratyaya. It's very, very difficult for anyone to ever cross over it. The one who surrenders unto me, those who surrender unto me, becomes easy. No problem. Elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, we hear this, padam padam yad vipadam nateyesham. That this world is full of obstacles at every step. Padam padam, every step. Full with difficulty. So difficult. But Govatsapadam. Those difficulties and the very ocean of samsara for one who has surrendered to Krishna, who has said, I can't do it on my own. I'm trying to practice, I'm trying to chant, I'm trying to do all these things, but I'm not able to do it without your mercy. If you don't give me some mercy, then I'll surely be finished very soon. For one who says that, mystically, the ocean of samsara becomes like the water in a calf's hoofprint. It doesn't even say a cow's hoofprint. This is very beautiful, actually. A calf's hoofprint is like this big. It's still small. It's pretty easy to step over. But a calf's hoofprint is like that. It becomes minuscule, like nothing, for someone who surrenders, for someone who actually comes to that stage of feeling, I cannot do this without your help. So Kali is showing us that we have to do this. We have to surrender. We have to stop with our measurements, with all of this maya, all of this desire to calculate and to measure. We have to surrender to Krishna, who is aprameya. We have to say, you are immeasurable, you are incalculable, you are unlimited. Unlimitedly wonderful, unlimitedly sweet, unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly compassionate. Your forgiveness is my only quality. Please help me. So when we do that, then we can start moving forward. Until then, our forward motion is the realization of that. And so we'll just have to run into the wall until the crack on our head becomes big enough that we can't ignore it anymore. And we say, whoa, this isn't working. This is not working. I'm not able to, this is a concrete wall and my skull is only so thick. I'm not able to cross this boundary. And then Krishna can pick you up and place you on the other side of that wall. There's no other way to defeat the mind than to ask Sri Hari to steal it, to take it away, to remove this poisonous calculative nature. I wanted to share, because there's one very beautiful prayer that Srila Rupa Goswami has written in regards to these principles and in regards to this lila, which I find to be quite succinct and beautiful. So, Kamam damo dharamama mana panaga pina bogo dushtashipi kutila valnai shobayatyesha lokam tadvikrantastvam uditapada dvandapanke ruhankam kurvandarvi karadamanahe tandavardandayamam. So Rupa Goswami says, O Lord Krishna, O Damodar, with its crooked motions and the sharp fangs of its wicked desires, the great snake of my mind is tormenting the entire world. O all-powerful Lord, O crusher of Kaliya, please punish that snake with your dancing. Please place on it the mark of your lotus feet. Please make my mind a servant. That's what Rupa Goswami is saying. He's saying, my mind is keeping me here. My mind, you've subdued Kaliya. You've danced on the hoods of Kaliya. You made him a devotee. Please make my mind a devotee. Please make me a devotee. Please crush my mind. Please, please, please. Rupa Goswami is saying like this. So we have a little more time. There's one point that I wanted to touch on in the second verse, which could also be quite expanded, but time is there. So in Shukadev Goswami's explanation, after Krishna has told Kaliya, don't fear, you've become my devotee. Don't worry about all of these things. Don't worry about Garuda, he's my servant. Go back to Ramanuka and be peaceful. Do my bhajan. No problem. Shukadev Goswami, he then explains how Kaliya feels after hearing that. So he says, my dear king, having been released by Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose activities are wonderful, Kaliya joined his wives in worshipping him with great joy and reverence. And in the purport, the disciples of Srila Prabhupada have practically verbatim given us the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur for this verse. And I found, on a little closer investigation, this is really kind of groundbreaking purport. It's pretty wild. So I'll just read it again. The word Adbhuta Karmana indicates the Lord's wonderful activities of saving the residents of Vrindavan from Kaliya, saving Kaliya himself from Garuda, and bestowing grace upon both the victims of violence and the committer of that violence. The word Krishnena, by Krishna, indicates that because Kaliya's wives were great devotees of the Lord and offered him loving affection, Krishna withdrew Karshanam, both Kaliya's offense against the Lord's devotee Garuda and that against the residents of Vrindavan, who were very dear to him. So, Sri Vishwanath is saying something that I've never heard before. It's quite amazing. That even though Kaliya, he committed Vaishnava Aparad not once, but twice, to undoubtedly pure devotees. First Garuda, who is Krishna's carrier, Lord Vishnu's carrier, and then second, against all the Vrajvasis. He actually killed the cowherd boys and then Krishna brought them back to life. And he was tormenting so many birds and animals had died in the lake. Any bird that flew over the lake, just flying over at the fumes of the poison, choo, would fall in and die. It was described that for, 8 bow lengths, which I don't really understand the measurement, but Prabhupada says the disciples of Srila Prabhupada say is like 500 feet. 500 feet off of the banks of that lake in the Yamuna, everything was dead. So all the trees, all the plants, all the grass, everything was finished. So Kaliya committed so many terrible offenses, so much Vaishnava aparad. And because his wives were great devotees, and because they prayed on his behalf, these things were removed. That's quite groundbreaking. And it's quite important for us to understand that it's extremely important to have a connection with someone who is dear to Krishna. Actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he says that one should find someone who is Vrajendra Nandana Preshta, who is dear to Vrajendra Nandana Krishna, who is very, very dear. Because that person, like the wives of Kaliya, can appeal to Krishna on our behalf, just like they appealed to Krishna on Kaliya's behalf. Sri Vishwanath, he explains to us here that the reason Krishna forgave Kaliya and gave him a chance was because his wives were great devotees and they had affection for him. And because Krishna is bound by that affection, Krishna is bound to listen to what they say. So it's very important for us to understand that actually our process, in a practical way, is to find somebody who is dear to Krishna and to serve that person and to want to be around that person and to want to get, as Jiva Goswami explains it, the specific mercy of that person. Devotees are para upakara. They want the welfare of all living beings. But that's general mercy. If we just stand in the room, we may get some mercy if they're feeling especially merciful. But by becoming acquainted with, by offering service to, by wanting to be around someone who has deep Krishna bhakti, that person's heart becomes moved, they see our condition, and they will say, Krishna, please help this person. And then Krishna helps. Just like with Kaliya. Kaliya was envy. He committed, again, so much Vaishnava aparad. But Krishna said, okay, I'll give him a shot. Let's make him a devotee. You want it? We'll do it. Because what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna? He says, Konteya prati janihi name bhakta pranashiti. You declare it boldly, O Arjuna, because I always stand behind the words of my devotees, that my devotee never perishes. Our acharyas have commented that Krishna asks Arjuna to say it because sometimes Krishna lies. Say again. He goes back on his words sometimes. Maybe we can't say lies, but he certainly delays what he says. Sometimes, in some cases, some famous cases, for quite a long time. Ultimately, everything Krishna does is all good, so the end result is more ecstasy, because that's what Krishna is interested in, is increasing the ecstasy between him and his devotees. But just to give the devotee's faith, because one thing Krishna never does is he never breaks the word of his devotee. If his devotee says something, he makes it true. So he says, Arjuna, you say it, because this will give faith to all the other bhaktas out there that this is okay. Because you've said my devotee will never perish, because I'm telling you to say it. I'm saying, don't worry, there won't be any exceptions. I may be a crooked cowherd boy, but I won't go back on my word in this regard. And so, I found this very, very beautiful, that Sri Vishwanath is pointing this out, that it was because of the wives of Kaliya that Kaliya was forgiven. And he points out specifically these extreme aparads, not just some save aparad, not just some neglect, you know, not neglect towards Krishna, because we hear that many times, that because somebody was envious towards Krishna and they attacked him, then Krishna said, okay, no problem, I don't mind. You know, it's heard that we should be tolerant when somebody says something to us, but if somebody says something to the Vaishnavas in a negative way, then we should be up in arms about it. That's what's been described. But even in that case, Krishna has forgiven, because his devotees, the Nagapatnis, have deep, deep affection. So that's what I could, that's my humble attempt to churn something out of these verses. Please forgive me if there were any mistakes. If there are any questions or comments, then please, corrections. Hari Shyam.
Good morning. Just two appreciations. I liked how you introduced this idea of Kaliya being ravaged by Ichha and Dvesha, and therefore we also are ravaged by these emotions, and we cannot conquer them on our own, so we have to surrender to the Lord. That was nice the way you elaborated on that theme, very practical and relevant at every point in our Krishna consciousness. Because we're always, what's interesting, I've noticed that no matter how much you learn, how much you grow in spiritual life, Krishna now doesn't allow you to coast if you're serious. There'll always be some new obstacle you have to overcome, you know, and generally the older you get, the more subtle the obstacles become, you know, so we need more help actually, and that, which is one of the reasons why the most advanced devotee always feels himself so fallen, perhaps, because he sees that actually my struggles are more subtle, and it's even harder to give those up. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So that was my first appreciation. I was really reflecting and appreciating your elaboration on the need for Krishna's shelter and surrender to Krishna, really, to overcome the Ichha and Dvesha problem. And then I also liked how you emphasized the importance of Kaliya's connection with his wives. Because it is, you're right, actually, when you said it's a groundbreaking purport, I was like, what's so groundbreaking? I read it again, and I was like, actually, it is. The fact that Krishna just forgave offenses to the Brajbasis. That's pretty huge. That's pretty huge. I mean, he did it to Lord Brahma. He forgave Lord Brahma. He forgave Indra.
But they didn't actually hurt anyone.
They didn't hurt anyone, but they offended, you know. They tried. They tried. The intention was bad, you know. But he forgave them. But in Kaliya's case, it was like he was out to get. He actually killed the cowherd boys. That's not cool. and Krishna forgave. You know, Krishna forgave him because of his relationship with his wife. So thank you for bringing that to our attention. I don't have a question, just appreciation. So thank you. Nice class.
Thank you. I just want to share one small thing. I always think of this. You brought up this point of how this is so practical. And also this point that as we grow in Krishna consciousness, the problems become more subtle and also more scary. Because the subtle things are the very difficult things to root out of our heart, you know? And I remember hearing this. It's a really nice analogy in this regard, that when a child is born, we've all seen babies do this, and maybe we have some memories of doing this as small children. You look up at the moon, and you reach for it. And you say, it's right there, and why can't I grab it? You know, you try to grab the moon. Because you have no conception of what the moon actually is. And then when you get a little older, when you can talk, say you're 3, you ask your parents, you know, I want the moon. I want the moon. There's even one pastime where Krishna wants the moon and Chandra Sarovar. Mother Yashoda takes him to Chandra Sarovar and shows him the moon there and says, see, there's your moon. Kunai, your moon is there. And he's pacified. We can say, okay, I have the moon. It's here at least. But we think, I want the moon. But then, as we get a little older, we understand, oh, the moon is very far away. But what is our concept of very far? It's not. We don't have a real concept of very far. But then when you're 10, you can understand more what is very far. And then when you're 15, you know science a bit. You know, oh, wow, it's some hundreds of thousands of, you know, millions of miles away. As our conception grows, the distance didn't actually grow, but our understanding of it grew, and that creates a feeling of inadequacy. And, wow, I could never reach the moon. It's impossible to reach the moon. So in the same way, as we progress in bhakti, we start off, we think, oh yes, I'll become Krishna conscious. I remember hearing one very funny presenter give a presentation on the 14 steps or the 9 steps of Rupa Goswami. And he said, yeah, you know, you come and you think, yeah, I'm almost self-realized. No, I'm almost vegetarian. Very, very simple understanding of what it means to be self-realized. But as our conception grows, when we come in contact with Krishna, who is Aprameya, who is Adhokshaja, who is Avyaya, inexhaustible, we can't help but feel very, very, very small. And like we're very, very far away. And the only way we'll ever get there is with help. He just wants to continue the thought.
That was a beautiful analogy of the child reaching for the moon.
Actually came from a Mridanga book.
It came from a Mridanga book.
A Mridanga book.
Same about Hanuman. Good analogy. Hanuman did the same thing. He tried to touch the sun when he was a little baby. He jumped up really high and tried to catch the sun. Hmm. It's a true story. But another way to look at that same analogy is that, yes, as we grow older, we might realize that actually, no, I can't reach the moon. That's definitely like a realistic estimation of one's inabilities. But then I was also thinking about it like this, that, you know, in real spiritual life, there has to always be this, you could almost say like, almost like a romantic side to ourselves where we dream that I could reach the moon.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if in our spiritual path we begin, we feel that, no, I'm not going to be able to touch the moon, then it's almost like our progress will be halted, right? Because it is, trying to get Krishna is like trying to jump up and catch the moon. But we have to somehow believe that I can do it with mercy. You know, it's like the whole Mother Yashoda pastime with Krishna. She actually believed she could tie him up. If she ever thought that he's, you know, Jagadishwar, how can I tie a rope around Jagadishwar? Yeah. She actually thought she could do it, which is why she was able to do it. So it's kind of interesting that there's a tension between our realism and then our idealism, you know?
Yeah, it's very nice.
Because if you become too aware of your inability and realize I'm not going to be able to jump to catch the moon, then, you know? Yeah. So it's kind of interesting, that example, right? You could go both ways. What do you think?
I think it's harmonized very nicely because our acharyas, Alex, our acharyas have showed us that, yes, it's possible. We've had examples and we've seen. And it comes back to this point that I can't do it on my own. But certainly it can be done. Because other people are doing it and they're coming and saying, I'll show you how to do it. So then, in that way, slowly, in degrees, as it's said in the Brahma Samhita, we become more inclined to this idea that, wow, if I do it this way, somebody's got a spaceship, you know, and he wants to fly me over there, you know. They've got some mantras. And then when we surrender, we can find ourselves on the moon. So I think it's, yeah, thank you. For the other side of the analogy. It's very nice. Alex?
Thanks, Prabhu. Hare Krishna. You were saying that Kaliya was able to free himself from fear by taking shelter of Krishna's bhakti. And yesterday I was hearing that bhakti is actually a person, like a personality. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could explain that, because I didn't understand that bhakti is a personality. Bhakti is a person.
Yeah, Bhakti Devi, she is a person, but well, that's a funny question. The difference between the person and the process. I have to think about that, because bhakti is something that we do. There's a process of bhakti, but Bhakti Devi is the one who gives the results of that process. So ultimately, in the spiritual sense, everything has a personification. In the spiritual world, nothing isn't personal. So bhakti is a person, but bhakti is also the process that we undergo. And the goal that we're aiming at, because bhakti is also a feeling that we have towards Krishna. Bhakti is the relationship between Krishna and the jiva. So, I don't know specifics. Hari Shyam, do you have something you could add to that?
It's really nice the way you...
The Swami question.
It's nice that you broke it down, that bhakti is also a feeling and also a process. I was just thinking about it in more simplistic terms, that, you know, Srimati Radharani, she is the personification of bhakti. So she is under whom that we're trying to serve. And from her heart emanates this energy, the bhakti shakti, that she places in our heart, by which our being becomes, you could say, an instrument for Krishna's pleasure. So she's the personification of bhakti, and from her heart emanates this energy that makes us, you could say, capable or fit for giving pleasure to Krishna.
Yeah.
And that energy, according to our nectar devotion, it's that the nine angas of bhakti.
Yeah.
Are, you could say, the physical manifestation of that energy. How does that energy get expressed in this world? It's those nine forms of devotional service, which is why even if one does them unknowingly, right, one gets benefit. Because actually they're coming from the heart of Srimati Radharani, that if you hear about Krishna, serve his deity form, visit his dham, even though you're a complete materialist, because it's coming from a spiritual place, it has potency. Of course, what to speak of when you do those nine angas with the feeling of bhakti in your heart, then it's like the result is surcharged. So I was thinking about it like that. She's the personification of bhakti, and from her emanates the energy of bhakti.
You brought something else up also for me, that in a really simple way, we can say that Srimati Radharani is Bhakti Devi. She is bhakti personified. And the process of bhakti is to do what she asks. In other words, she's laid down, this is how you please Krishna, because you said she's the one we want to serve under. So you do what she asks. That's the process coming from the person. So in that way, they're harmonized. Does that help? Okay. It's 8:45. You just keep it short.
Thank you, Prabhu. You made pretty much all profound, wonderful points, whether you got them from the acharyas or not, and expanded on them. They're very profound. Maybe you could expand on, like you were mentioning, Maya means to measure, and we have the tendency to measure everything, measure people's power, their Christian consciousness, etc. Like Dacha measured Shiva, then got himself in trouble. Hiranyakashipu measured Prahlad. So many things. Well, one, this is an interesting point. I think I brought up to Alice Prabhu maybe a couple weeks ago. But there's two paths. Maybe you could explain something that causes obstacles between devotee relationships. Where basically there's so many pastimes where one devotee glorifies another devotee. And then that devotee that's glorified criticizes the other devotee. There's a pastime like that. Gadahara Pandit Prabhu, Pundari Vidyanidhi, when everyone was glorifying Pundari Vidyanidhi as a great Vaishnava, Lord Chaitanya, Vasudev Datta, and Mukunda Datta. When Gadahara Pandit Prabhu came to see Pundari Vidyanidhi, Pundari Vidyanidhi told Mukunda Datta, who is this effulgent brahmachari? He is such a glorious devotee. And then the interesting thing, Gadahara started criticizing Pundari Vidyanidhi in his mind. Same in the Chaitanya Bhagavat Madhya chapter 21, where Srivas Thakur, he went to the Bhagavatam class of Devananda Pandit, and he was crying with Krishna Prima in his eyes, appreciating the Bhagavatam class of Devananda Pandit. And Devananda Pandit criticized him. This is my Bhagavatam class. You're annoying it. Then his students threw him out. And Lord Chaitanya says, you are not qualified to give Bhagavatam class, because although you have the credentials on the outside, you don't have the essentials on the inside. So my question is, what are some steps we could take forward to get rid of this demoniac anartha. We see these anarthas the whole pastime. So we see so many pastimes, but anyway, these are a few I like to share. And we measure people, and maybe you could expand on some of those points a little bit.
Gadadhar Pandit's example is extremely high. This is the relationship between Srimati Radharani and her father, Vrishabhanu Maharaj. So the only thing he did was make some small criticism in his mind, briefly. So to try to level ourselves on that standard is a bit impractical. The best thing for us, Devananda Pandit, is a little more applicable, is to take faith that the Vaishnavas are transcendental, even the small ones. A Kanishtha Adhikari always thinks, oh yes, this is a big, big Vaishnav, and everybody else is a rascal. The sannyasi is good, the deity is good, Prabhupada is good, but everybody else, they're bogus. So we have to stop this. First, we have to understand the tattva. The tattva is that anyone who's practicing bhakti, they're under Krishna's protection. Everything that's happening to them, everything that they're going through, everything that they're experiencing is Krishna's mercy to them to help purify their hearts, just like this experience with Kaliya. So if we judge somebody for that, it's not going to be good for us. We have to understand that there's no point in judging Vaishnavas. Practically speaking, if we see that somebody's offensive, or that they're, one could say, nasty, or they're difficult to be around, then we respectfully distance ourselves. But if we get into those fights, then that's a big problem for our spiritual life. And if we find ourselves distancing ourselves from every Vaishnava because they're all nasty and bad and weird and, you know, whatever other number of adjectives we can attach to them, we need to introspect and see that maybe it's me that's nasty and bad and weird. It takes a healthy dose of introspection to see that this problem is actually in my heart. As Rupa Goswami prayed in this prayer, my mind is tormenting the world. I am the tormentor. I am the problem. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I have no good qualities. We have to meditate on this because it's actually true. In our own lives, in my life, I am the one who's causing all the problems. Nobody else can actually make problems for me other than myself. If we have faith in Krishna Bhakti, we understand that actually, every adversity that comes my way is Krishna's mercy on me to help me purify. And if I'm not taking advantage of that and being thankful for that, that's my mind getting in the way and hurting me. So the devotees around me, then they don't become obstacles. Their association becomes opportunities for me to every day live the principles that I idealize. Because that's what we do in bhakti. We idealize higher principles. And we deeply desire to imbibe them. That's the only way to get around this, as far as I understand. One great Vaishnava, when I asked this question to him, he said, it takes a good devotee. He said, Prabhupada said, it takes a good devotee. It takes an introspective devotee. This is coming from the Gundicha Marjanam pastime. To get rid of these deep, subtle things, which even though this one isn't very subtle, it's usually very oblate and kind of gruesome. To get rid of these things, it takes a good devotee, which means one who can turn around and say, I'm the rascal. I'm the one criticizing. I'm the one doing all the nasty things. If we don't do that, good luck. Good luck. That's what I can think. I hope that helps, please. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Kishore Kishori ki jai. Shri Shri Gorni Tai Ki Jai, Shri Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Ki Jai, Giriraj Maharaj Ki Jai.